Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name is Tom Z, joined as always by Tim, aka Scoop McBasketball. Tim's got some scoops for us later today, talking coaching staff stuff. We're going to dive a little bit into potential sign-in trade ideas. We've talked a little bit about, you know, names that we can't get through free agency in a traditional way, maybe packaging Schroeder, KCP, Kuzma, so we'll touch on that a little bit later. But first, Tim, the news of the week, I suppose, just kind of catching everyone up with a couple of little things. Let's start with Andre Drummond. Okay, Andre Drummond had a recent kind of press tour here going on, like, pardon my take, you know, going on, I think he was on The Jump, right? Trolling people in Instagram comments saying that he could be, like Kareem Abdul Drummond if his coach played him more. So, I don't know. Tim, I really, once I found out that Andre Drummond was trying to sell an NFT or non-fungible token for my boomers friends out there, I basically just ignored every word out of his mouth after that revelation for me, because the context of it is this man's trying to sell something and it's fully within his right. It's, I'm not, you know, criticizing that at all. But to me, you have to take this kind of, you know, statement, or, you know, maybe the Instagram thing was just how he felt, you know, but it seems a little bit PR-y to me. I don't know what you think, but I don't know. Do you think Andre Drummond could be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar if we'd just given him the chance?
I don't think so. And given how inefficient he's been in the post for the past like decade, I would imagine doing more of that wouldn't suddenly take him from bad to really, really good.
I appreciate that you didn't just flat say no. Like, you're that, like,
there,
nuanced.
You're just a reason. Like, yeah, this isn't Tim hates him. This is like, no,
no,
this isn't close to reality.
I'm just
going to
say no. Yes.
Yeah,
no.
Just no. And I agree with you. I think a lot of this is PR-y. And the PR piece to me is putting him on the stage. And getting him in front of, getting him on the podcast, getting him on TV, him tweeting some of the stuff he tweeted to generate attention. That was intentional. Once he was on those stages, he was certainly asked questions that he didn't respond in ways that left me feeling better about bringing him back, or specifically insight into his mindset and how he views himself that were just maybe some blind spots that he has between where he thinks he is and where we would like him to be, or just like a lack of like, no, I'm good. Like, the team not playing me is their issue. Or like, if Vogel needs to figure his stuff out, like, I'm, you know, I'm Andre Drummond. I don't have any issues. That was the general like vibe of a lot of it. And I don't think he's back, but given what's happened in this past week, I feel even stronger about him probably not returning to the team. And just the bridge burning it wasn't necessary as part of that PR tour, but that's what ended up seeming to happen.
Yeah, I'm feeling less confident he returns as well. And I will gladly pay you $100 for Andre Drummond to not be on the Lakers next year. So I think, you know, it's a win-win or you lose-lose with losing money and getting Andre Drummond on the team. So, you know, I don't know what to think of there. I do know he's been getting a lot of heat from Lakers fans on Twitter, for better or worse. You know, he wasn't the only problem, you know what I mean? But he definitely didn't help the way you thought he might. But again, this guy got bought out, right, for a reason. But Tim, you got to let Damian Jones go. I see you tweeting about Damian Jones at like 5 p.m. on a Tuesday about the one who got away. I'm just like, Tim,
it was mostly
you're better
a joke.
Than
this.
I know.
Was one of those, if you're a real Laker fan, who is this?
Okay,
I think
fair.
I think the context is important.
Fair. Okay. All right. Anything else you had to say about Drummond? I don't know really else. it just kind of seems like really. A stunt, right?
Yeah,
like,
at this point, I don't think we need to cover him. We'll come back. We're just about done, and we've brought up the Discord a million times over the past couple months, but we've been doing that team for a day exercise where we say, all right, we're the Timberwolves. What are our goals? How are we handling our free agents? What are our needs? What's our spending power? Who are we going to go after? Or what kinds of players are we going after? We're only a couple teams away from being done with that. So next week, when we have this podcast, we'll have a much more concrete sense of like, this is Montrezl Harrell's market, or this is Dennis Schroeder's market, this is Andre Drummond's market. And I'm really interested to like crunch all the numbers and see if he has a market higher than that taxpayer MLE, because he may be costing himself money right now. Mm-hmm. He might think, and it seems as though he thinks he's worth well more than that. He is worth well more than that. But given what the market looks like, if he might be one of those guys on the fence that might not make more than that taxpayer MLE, and he might be losing out on a good opportunity. So don't count your chickens before, don't count your contract before it happens. So that's, you know, play the PR game a little bit better. He's certainly playing the PR game, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an A-plus effort. I mean, and another guy who is in a similar situation and is more in the decision-making power is Montrezl Harrell, and he's also been someone that in Instagram recently shared a few comments that weren't super kind towards Frank Vogel.
We talked a little bit about this before we jumped on. It's hard. One of the hardest things to do is be self-aware about your own faults and give your – I'm not saying Montrez isn't, but based on his comments – seems like excuses or, you know, just reasons to fight with trolls online. If that's your fancy, you know, by all means do it, but it's not productive. It's not really great for the team. I'm not going to call it like a distraction because everyone does it, but it can become one if you know, done too much too often, because a lot of the Laker fans are, you know, eagle-eyeing the comments of every player on the NBA, everything that happens, everyone's likes, you know, so.
Yeah. It's not a great look, though, for a guy who's going, he wants to make $10 million or more a year on this open market, saying, like, adding on to people, you know, people are going to say whatever they're going to say on Instagram, but taking a, like, Frank Vogel, like, effed up our chance with Trez comment and him adding on to that and saying, yeah, like matchup situations are excuses. Those things aren't real. Like I don't know. That gives us some insight into his mindset. And these are the types of mindsets and comments that, thinking back to Markieff Morris's exit interview comments about like certain guys on the roster weren't there to win, or they weren't there to like be part of that team. That's not something we can really take for granted. And this year showed us that. Two seasons ago, winning the title, there were guys that legit had to sacrifice. And we didn't hear moaning about it, you know, as the season was going on or in the offseason, but we're hearing that now. And it's, you know, in the heat of the moment, you're on our team. We want you to do well. Yeah. At this point, it's much easier to see them go with how they've been treating these, you know, this past month.
People tell on themselves every day. Mm-hmm. Listen to them. Listen to them. They are not lying about who they are. They will tell on themselves every day. Well, that's neither here nor there, Tim. Let's move on a little bit to the other news. Recently, we've had a lot of assistant coach debates, not just after hiring Coach David Fizdale, but we have Phil Handy potentially leaving the Lakers, getting a head coaching interview with the Washington Wizards, and also Lionel Hollins. Forgive me, I don't remember where he interviewed, but he's had interviews over the last couple years in the offseason. So it looks like, I think, according to Mark Spears, that the Lakers are looking for another assistant coach. And now that could be to replace another one that they suspect will leave, either Handy or Hollins. It could be to add a fourth assistant coach. Now, you can only have three on the bench, right? But the other guys can like just sit right behind them, right? They can just, you know what I mean?
It's, you know, sit a foot behind the players. Right.
I saw somebody really said like, there's only three head coach assistant coaches. And I'm like, that's irrelevant. It's okay. But whatever. Tex Winter, anyone, he was never on the front of the bench. Right. So how do you unpack some of the reports that have come out there? I think Phil Handy absolutely deserves a head coaching opportunity. If I were him, I don't know if I'd want it to be Washington, but you can't always pick. You want to get your foot in the door. I think he's fantastic attitude. I will love him. I don't want him to leave. I can't say all those same things about Lionel Hollins because he's a little bit more in the shadows, a little bit, you know, more of a mellow, you know, PR figure, but if one or either of them leaves, is there a certain coach that you might, you know, other than Adelman, that we talked about a little bit, or is a type of coach? What do you expect the Lakers to do going forward if one of these guys leaves?
If one of them leaves, my guess is they'll replace them with someone who does a role or has a skill set similar to the roles these players or these coaches were in. So if Hollins leaves, they're looking for a Scott Brooks kind of guy who just took the Portland Trailblazers lead assistant role, which Hollins was, that's what he was interviewing for as well. So if he were to leave, that's someone that can come in and has that head coaching experience, can provide that structure and, you know, be that, you know, lead guy, second in command and help figure things out. If Handy were to leave, from what I understand, a lot of what he does is player development. And
yeah, like
so
skill
I would
development
expect them,
stuff, right?
Yeah, I would expect them to look to fill that void with someone who does skill work. And I mean, if you can go look at Phil Handy's website. It's one of those, like, it's not on like Masterclass, but it's basically one of those sorts of things where, like,
yeah, you pay 94 feet a game.
Yeah, you can go watch Phil Handy, like, it's basically like YouTube videos of drills that you pay to watch.
There's no rotating rims. There's no spiked rims. There's
that
no
stuff is crazy. Dude.
There's no clown car basketball that you have to dribble through. I couldn't believe that when I saw it, Tim. I was like,
that was Lethal Shooter.
Yeah, this man is
talk
a
about
grifter.
Some PR.
A grifter.
It's generating engagement, but it's the type of stupid stuff that like doesn't directly translate to the game.
No
that
kidding.
I see random. You know, random coaches and trainers do stuff like that all the time to try to generate like attention, but it's not how I would hope my kids or my players or the players playing for the team I root for are going through, because that doesn't seem like it translates to the game directly. So we wonder why the Lakers are bricking threes in the playoffs. It's because the rims weren't rotating.
I'm sorry, because they didn't help but bring it up.
Like, come on, man.
We had THT working out with him recently, so I don't know. God bless him.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Phil Handy leaves, it's tough to find a guy at that level. Phil's Handy has been with LeBron for years. Mm-hmm. He won a championship in Toronto as well, I believe. You know, he's been on the last five like successful, you know, champions basically. And yeah, you don't just pluck those guys out of nowhere. And it's not to say that like other guys can't teach skills, but Phil is just been in the
he's
game
really
so long.
Top
he's
of the
really
level.
Good at it. Yeah. So I feel like that would be a big loss if Phil were to leave the team.
It would be. If Hollins were to leave, it's harder to gauge exactly what the drop off would look like, but we can speak pretty confidently and say that Phil Handy is among the top 5% of people doing what he does for his job. So odds are losing him would result in some sort of drop off. So we'll hope he stays. He has really good relationships with the players. But I mean, you know, best of luck for him in his future opportunities. And if he were to get a spot either as a head coach or on that, I don't know, maybe lead assistant or something on the Wizards or Orlando or wherever, you know, more power to him. But it would, from a Lakers perspective, certainly be a step back. And shout out Mark Spears for doing his green room sessions where like he will take questions and then be like, oh yeah, by the way, I did hear about this and like break news just because somebody asked. And then shout out to the folks in our Discord for going into each of those green rooms and asking the questions that we've planted. And so, for example, the Scott Brooks news came because the day before that, Mark Spears held a green room and one of the fine folks, first team all Discord in our Discord, hopped in there. 2 weeks with Pay is his name in the Discord server. Went in there, asked him if the Lakers were looking into any assistant coaching changes. And he said, I don't know. I'll go look into it. He looked into it. The very next day, that Scott Brooks report comes out. So that was really cool seeing the cause and effect there. Another time he asked about if the Lakers have been tied to DeMar DeRozan. Because it is, you know, trust me, I have sources season. Mm-hmm. And we see all of these random accounts tweeting things that, you know, my source tells me, random account with 1,000 followers,
right.
That, like, yeah, it's when you see things like that, it's actually really helpful to know the CBA well, because a lot of them are tweeting things out that like can't be possible or like don't make sense. So that's a good way to like sort out the nonsense. But keep in mind, the Lakers fan base is gigantic. And if you were to try to chase clout and go make up fake stuff and get lots of people to retweet it, it's going to be positive news about the Lakers. And if you're doing things like, well, someone in the organization said they're looking into this or they're interested in this, that's not something that can be proven wrong. So you can just keep making stuff up, getting attention, and then gaining followers. So, you know, see those grifters for what they are. But so we asked them about DeMar DeRozan, and he said, no, they're pretty more definitively, there has not been anything tying the Lakers to DeRozan this offseason, at least so far. And then yesterday, same people in the Discord asked about what will happen with Trez's opt-in or opt-out. He didn't have intel there, but they asked him about coaching staff changes, and he said there is one move the Lakers are anticipating will happen. He didn't say what that was, but that was around the same time we heard the Phil Handy news come out. So might be that, might be Hollins. It's been nice being able to kind of like nudge people and ask who have those connections to like figure out what the news is. Because like, you know, we're not changing who the Lakers are going to go hire, things like that. But it helps us understand their mindset and their approach and cut through some of the ambiguity. Because with a huge gray area, it's easy to like fit your narrative to the Lakers not doing something. But this helps us get a better sense for like what they are looking at and what they're not planning on doing.
Yeah, the Lakers, I don't know if this is apropos of anything, but they've actually been pretty leak-proof, you know, over the last couple of years and running a pretty tight ship. You don't see a lot of Woj, you know, breaking Lakers. It's a lot more Shams or Chris Haynes, you know, often has the Lakers beats. So, you know, I'm not saying only listen to those people, but, you know, there's a reason you don't get a lot of tangible, like real, I think, Lakers scuttlebutt, for lack of a better word, because they kind of keep a tight lid on it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely, you know, consider where the sources are coming from.
And speaking of sources and speaking of the Lakers' tight ship that Woj maybe doesn't have those connections with, you know who does have connections? Again, the Lakers Discord server. And that group is fantastic. We've done a whole bunch of fun stuff in there, and it's more than just like chatting without having like Pelicans fans looking over your shoulder. One of our more recent schemes has been trying to dig into that mindset and figure out what the Lakers are thinking. And so firsthand from a Lakers coach, the Lakers Exceptionalism Pod Discord was told that LA has no plans to add an offensive coach to their staff, and that David Adelman will not join the Lakers organization this offseason. That coach went on and didn't mince words and shared explicitly that the coaching staff cannot properly evaluate and will not evaluate the team's offensive X's and O's until the roster is healthy. What are your thoughts, Tom? This is firsthand from a coach on the coaching staff.
Okay. So you can qualitatively judge anything, anytime, right? And what we try to do here, Tim, and something I think that you're just fantastic at, is parsing out the context, right? So someone saying that their offense can't be judged without being healthy, there is truth in that, where you can't judge their ceiling of what they can do, you know what I mean, fairly without the pieces on the board. It's like if I started a chess game without my queen, and I lost.
You're going to get rocked, Tom.
Yeah. But we can still... Against any decent player, you're going to get rocked.
Yeah.
But you can still play good strategy without a queen, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's really hard. Really, really hard. But if your strategies without that queen suck or aren't up to the you know, raising the floor of everyone to make things better, to make things a little bit easier for everyone, absolutely we can judge you.
Yep. And slight counterpoint, I would be sympathetic to the opinion of someone saying, well, Tom, these coaches, like, we need them to be good when the team is healthy. If the team isn't healthy, we don't have a chance anyway. So if LeBron, if they're not drawing up good X's and O's when AD's out or LeBron's out, not the worst thing in the world. I would rebut that by saying the X's and O's when they are healthy, and this year and last year, and the little tactics things. haven't been fantastic either.
And yeah.
A lot of these things that are happening without those players on the court are still translatable. It's still transferable, prowess and X's and O's. You don't need to have every player on the roster healthy to be able to run the types of things you would want to be running with a healthy right. roster. So we can absolutely evaluate things. You need to be able, from a leadership standpoint, whether it's in basketball, in the business world, doesn't matter. You need to be able to make decisions in ambiguous situations. And that means, anybody can look at a huge sample size of something working or not working and say, this works. Great. Good job. Where people make their money is being able to say, this isn't working in the beginning of the season. Or during the off season, or when that sample size is small, and be able to pivot so that you course correct. I'm trying to drive to Toronto. If I start driving in the wrong direction, I need to course correct as soon as possible. And that'll, give me the shortest time to get there. If you don't have those self-checks and you keep going in the wrong direction for way too long, and then you need to change, you've had a huge missed opportunity, even if you do eventually get to the solutions. And it's something that really has bothered us, and we've certainly talked about a good bit, but has hit home for me in a little bit of a different way recently, getting back into coaching and having to basically this time of year, we're actually running a whole new offense this year. So looking at the personnel, figuring out what concepts, what actions do we want to be using? What are the combinations of players and the lineups and the rotations and all that stuff? How do we set up our players to succeed? And that's been a really fun, real life exercise, because I've done plenty of consulting and saying this college team run these plays, Illinois, LSU, whoever. Having to do it for ourselves has been this is so fun. This is have a lot of fun with it. And you have to, in those situations, be able to draw stuff up and evaluate what you're drawing up based on if you think it should work or not, based on the personnel and just how good the X's and O's are. I can draw up bad stuff or good stuff, and I need to be able to tell the difference without actually having to run it. If you need to test everything out in real life and spend those limited minutes in games and months of the season to figure out if something works or not, you're not making the most of that limited amount of time that you have.
Right.
So,
I was just going to say, Tim, I know you and I have spoken a lot over the years about how basketball franchises, and honestly sports in general, are one of the least business-like run things, where in traditional successful business, you are judged with context, right? So again, using an analogy, if you're a McDonald's franchise owner and you run out of Big Mac, right? You don't, for whatever reason, have the Big Mac. And the McDonald's, corporation looks at your numbers and says you're doing poorly. When we do get these orders, they're slow. People complain about the taste. And you say, I don't have Big Mac. That's not an acceptable answer, right?
Yeah, it's true. But there are still tangible things, like you shared, the time between someone ordering and getting their food. Those are tangible things that are not impacted by the Big Mac being there or not.
Right.
And if you can't look at that process and evaluate the tangible piece of those X's and O's for what it is, or anything in business or basketball or wherever, you're gonna, struggle. This is years ago when we were talking about Luke Walton having injured Lakers rosters.
Right.
You can still evaluate that coaching staff even though they didn't have a full healthy season. If every team this year that had key players injured completely punted the idea of making any roster changes or making any X's and O's changes to improve and weren't, self-scouting, nobody's making any moves, man. Everybody's been hurt.
Absolutely.
It's been, of any year, this has been such a crazy year with key players going down, all-stars, number one, number two players. And that doesn't mean that you still can't evaluate what happened. So, I understand the Lakers missed a bunch of time and a lot of minutes, and they lost a lot of value with the specific players they had out. But you should still every day be looking at your process and trying to find ways to improve. Yeah. And it's easy to listen to this podcast and other podcasts and say I get it. But, it's hard from an audio standpoint to not spell out exactly what we mean. But I think we've done a pretty good job making the case that there are tangible things that can improve. It's still going to be the LeBron and AD offense, but there are those little things that you can work on. And I do think sometimes, especially on Twitter, simplifying things to match the format or to match the audience can lead the audience to believe that in reality they just are super simple and it doesn't matter who's at the helm when coaching really does matter in the league.
And I don't know, you know, who this coach spoke to. I wonder what guys or circumstance, what relationship they have. So I don't, I'm not blaming this coach for defending their job performance, right? That's within anyone's right to defend their job performance. And instill a lot of that context that most of these tweets are missing and most of the internet is missing, sometimes on purpose, right? But I think it's important to also, and again, I'm not expecting them to do this with us or the outside public, say, yeah, this weak side, you know, post-up, the kind of scheme we have going on is just not working. And again, I'm not expecting them to say that out loud to the world. But if they don't think that, and it seems that they're content with where their offense is, it, like, just because you won the championship in the bubble doesn't necessarily mean that was a championship offense. You know what I mean? Or that you can't improve that offense from one year to the next, because that championship bar is raised every year. Every year you have to get better than the year before. You know what I mean? So I think it's great context. Thank you to our Lakers Discord members. If you want to become a member, we have a bunch of different categories and threads. If you want to talk about silly stuff or in-game stuff or, you know, speculating off-season moves, DM Tim or I a screenshot of a five-star review of the pod, and we'll send you that disco invite. Yeah, I popped in the other day, and I was like, wow, I'm like so behind. But this is like a fun, you know, like a little backlog of chat from people.
Yeah, we run it in a way like a lot of agencies run their things in terms of like mapping. Like, you know, this is the hardest working Lakers podcast, Tom. We're like actually, like when it came to trades, when it's coming to free agency, like we're not making stuff up. We're getting those perspectives, crunching that analysis, and then trying to give you realistic options. And that, you know, heads over to the Discord as well. And that is such a, just, we have the best fans, just the most passionate, like in there actually brainstorming. Nobody's like trying to dunk on each other in there. We're like having real dialogue, and the team for a day thing has been so fun, where like you're getting a chance to do what agencies are doing and teams are doing, where they say, all right, here's what we'd like to do, but what is the market for our players? And you can't do that without thinking from those other teams' perspective. So I can say I know the CBA 100 times better today than I did a couple of weeks ago because of that. And the other folks in the Discord do as well. And that's going to transition us into the second half of our podcast, but it's just been a ton of fun. So again, if you want to join, reach out to one of us, shoot us that five-star review, and we can get you in there, join the family. And it's just so much fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, with that, let's take a quick break and we'll move on to our sign and trade section right now.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back from break. Tim, just as we were starting this call, I was like Q&Aing you on the sign and trade rules, and they're so they're so cumbersome and convoluted for probably all very specific reasons that they do this. Yep. But if you can try and break down as simply as you can, again, there's a lot of variations, some of the sign and trade rules, because let's start first with signing and trading away Dennis Schroeder. So what does that look like? What are the limitations, I guess? And what can the Laker fans expect? Not maybe the quality of player, but the contract or package to come back in a sign and trade for Dennis Schroeder.
So the player would need to want to do it. Because they're a free agent. It's their choice. And because of that, this is something that the teams can't really be working on and have come public now, because you're not allowed to be talking to other teams' players or you're not allowed to be talking to free agents. That'd be tampering. So this
like
is
the Bogdanovich thing last year.
Yep, exactly. And just I believe yesterday as well, Brian Windhorst had to talk back a comment he made on national television about Dame Willard and other teams trying to sign and trade with him, which can't be happening. So I believe that it was happening and he realized, oh crap, I just, you know, got a bunch of people in trouble. I need to walk this back.
Backtrack.
I believe that's more likely than he just made something up. And there certainly are people making things up, but you know, that's that situation. So the player needs to be interested. So for like Dennis Schroeder, for example, he would need to want to go wherever he wants to go. If he wants to go to a competitor, if you're trying to trade him to the Thunder or the Magic, perhaps, he may not have interest. He may just say, no, I don't want to. From his perspective, he would do a sign and trade to go somewhere where he's able to get more money than he would otherwise get going to that same team. So if he knows he wants to go play for Minnesota, or Minnesota might be a bad example. If he wants to play for the Nets, and no, the Nets are a bad example too. Shit. If he wants to go play for a team that can't offer
Philly.
We'll say Philly. Good one. If he wants to play for the Sixers, they can't offer him as much as the Lakers can. They just don't have the cap space. I'd have to check, but we'll say they have their full MLE. They can offer him about $9 million a year. The Lakers can offer him basically whatever they want. They can offer him $30 million, basically. Like, it's up to a 20 or 25% of the whole cap. So the Lakers can offer him way more than another team. So if he wants to go to another team and he wants to make more money, he can go to the Lakers and say, hey, I want to go play for Philly. Can you see if you can work something out? And from Philly's perspective, they may want Schroeder, but they know they can't get him with how much money they have available. So their only route to getting him is a sign and trade. So they say, all right, yeah, you're worth it. We will give away our assets to the Lakers in exchange for getting you. And then the Lakers are in a situation where, yeah, you're letting Schroeder go, but you are able to, you know, get some assets back that you otherwise wouldn't have if he just went and signed for another team. So that's just the kind of general mindset. From a rule standpoint, the hard cap is something that we have to be aware of. So Schroeder can't go to the Nets because it would have to be a sign and trade to a team that is above the hard cap, above that apron. And that apron is $143 million this year. So any team that is already above that cannot receive a sign and trade player in a trade, and at the end of the trade still be above it. So if they were above it to start with, they receive Schroeder, but at the end of the trade they're below it, that would be fine. The only way that could happen is if they're trading like Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or James Harden.
Or Harris, but
So that won't happen.
Right.
That's why Schroeder sign and trade to the Nets does not make sense. That's something to keep in mind. And then when you are hard capped, that also limits. So when you're hard capped, you can't go above that apron during the trade or at any point for the rest of the season. So if you're doing that, that's very restrictive. That means that the Lakers can't go pay Alex Caruso $15 million a year or $12 million a year, whatever they have to pay him to keep him, because maybe they'd be up against the top of that cap. So for example, again, $143 million apron. If the Lakers bring back nobody other than THT, who they can offer $10.5 million, and then we'll say Wes and Keefe on minimum deals, they're at $142 million, and it limits 143. So they can't bring in a sign-and-trade guy and be in a position where they're able to like continue paying like Alex Caruso or somebody like that.
Or even fill out the roster. And just so Lakers fans know, the Lakers hard capped themselves last summer by sign and trading for Dennis Schroeder. So we spoke a lot about the limitations of hard capping when we had to wait until we had like the prorated minimum, you know what I mean, to sign some of these end of the bench guys, because we just couldn't go over that apron.
Yep. And that's, you know, he's on this podcast more than he should be, but that is one potential reason for Damian Jones not coming back, is the Lakers could not afford to offer him a contract after they released him for like weeks after they released him.
Right.
Until the proration was low enough that it allowed them to stay under the hard cap. And that gave Sacramento or other teams a window to go sign him for, you know, weeks at a time. He just wasn't working. So that is one repercussion. If the Lakers go into next season, they're hard capped and things aren't working out so well and they need to make a trade, they're more limited in what they're able to do in those standpoints. If you are hard capped, you cannot use your taxpayer MLE. So this is the mini MLE. It's about $5 million a year. This is what, if Schroeder comes back, this is what the Lakers are going to be using. If they do a sign and trade, they can't use that. So there goes, even if you wanted Andre Drummond back for that $5 million a year, you can't get him anymore. So if you sign and trade for, we'll say, Spencer Dinwiddie, and he comes in, your only options to replace, to add onto the roster then are minimum contracts.
Well, question really quick. Can you, you know, sign and trade two players for each other? I feel like you can only do one sign and trade one way, right?
You can do them at the same time and go into different teams. With the Nets, again, it wouldn't work because they can't receive Schroeder.
Because I'm just saying, in theory,
yes.
The Nets could sign and trade Spencer Dinwiddie and the Lakers could sign and trade Dennis Schroeder in the same transaction.
I believe so.
Okay. Got it. No, sorry. I wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, no worries. So, yeah, again, taxpayer MLE is a big thing. That's the Lakers' one bullet to spend this offseason to go get a free agent, and they lose that if they do a sign and trade. They have the full MLE available. That doesn't go away with the sign and trade, but you can only use that to stay below the apron, and if they were to do the sign and trade, they'd already be pretty much there. So that won't be an option. So I'll use Dinwiddie just as an example of what might happen. So he's opted out. He already opted out of his deal. The deadline was a while ago. That, you know, that's done already. So it would have to be a sign and trade for him. If he's coming over and he thinks he's the best point guard available on the market, and he's done his own PR stuff, and he was on a podcast yesterday, 2 days ago, where he was talking about, you know, if the Nets want me back, they've got to go offer me that $125 million, because, you know, any other team can offer me 3 years, $60 million. He thinks he's worth $20 million, and I would expect if he's going to come in a sign and trade, maybe he takes a little discount to come to the Lakers. But this is a dude who hasn't really made his money. This is a guy who's been good, and this is his one chance. And he's 27, 28. He's getting up there from a prime age season. This is his big deal. So he's not going to take a little bit of money to go play for the Lakers. He's not going to ring chase the way you might find other players. He's going to want to get his money. So if we say we give him like $18 million, the Nets have his bird rights, so they can re-sign him for up to $28 million a year. But we'll say he takes like a $20 million deal. He comes on over, that hard caps the Lakers. This means you lose your MLE, so Drummond's not coming back. You have to renounce Schroeder, so he's not coming back. THT, we'll say, gets his $10.5 million. You'd have to trade something to get Dinwiddie. So I don't know, KCP or Kuzma, and then your 22nd pick. And then if you trade KCP or Kuz plus the 22. And you pay THT to come back, you then have about $31 million total to spend between Dinwiddie and Caruso, which could be doable. But if a team offers Alex Caruso $336 million, he might walk. And you've then lost, we'll say you traded KCP, your first round pick, Alex Caruso, your MLE, Dennis Schroeder, to bring in one player. So if you're going to do something like this, you really need to make sure it's the move, because you pretty much strip all your assets to do something like this, and end up in a tough spot.
Can we quickly do the Spencer Dinwiddie was not really a great fit for the Lakers? Like, I'm just pulling up the profile, you know, Tim. He's listed out offensive archetype, secondary ball handler. Okay, that's fine. Defensive role, point of attack. I don't know. I don't feel like need that. I feel like we're okay in those areas.
And I would say to look at last year's stuff, just because he barely played this year. if you were to be
pulled. Or you mean the year before? Yeah, okay. He was, you know, coming off the bench early in that run. I'll bring up his stats from last year. I don't think the shooting is there nearly enough. I don't think I think he's good at getting to the rim, but not as, I don't know, explosive as a Schroeder.
I'll say this for Dinwiddie. He is a legit, and has done it consistently for years, he is legit when it comes to getting to and finishing at the rim, and when it comes to his ability to play make for others. He's very good at those things. He has not been a consistent three-point shooter, and that limits his ability to manipulate the defense and limits the output of that playmaking in ways that, like, kind of like a TJ McConnell, where he's like great playmaker, great at getting to the rim, finishing at the rim, but you don't have to respect him as a shooter, so you can go under his ball screens, and that changes the way you play him. Dinwiddie's closer to that style of player from a skill set standpoint, where he's like legit good at things, but because the shooting's not there, it lowers the ceiling of what he can bring you. And well, from a fit standpoint, if he's that third banana, you probably want someone that you can rely on to shoot.
I mean, is he substantially better than Dennis Schroeder in the places that we need him to be? And I don't think so. Going back to last year, overall 3-point percentage, you know, per your profile, 30.8%. Now, his catch and shoot 3-point percent was 37, which is good, but it's not like, oh my God, great, right?
Yeah, that's a
B
minus for catching and shooting on threes.
Yeah. It's the best he does in 3-point shooting, but I don't think based on, you know, if you're trading KCP as our 40% 3-point shooter last year, inconsistent maybe, but he's gotten better in 3-point shooting in the last three seasons, percentage-wise. And KCP, we know what he can do on defense. He's a known commodity and how he fits around the rest of the pieces. And if you're losing Schroeder for, you know, money purposes and he has to walk, and then you're losing KCP and getting back like a modicum of Schroeder to me, maybe, and losing the 22 pick or a THT or a Kuzma, it's just not worth it to me. I don't see the upside there with Spencer Dinwiddie, who I like as a person. I think he's a very smart guy. A lot of people gave him shit for trying to crowdfund his last contract. But I think he thinks about things in a unique way. But I don't think his performance on the court would warrant the amount of resources it would take to bring him to the Lakers, even though it's also not very practical in you know, making it happen anyway.
Yeah, I think he's better than Schroeder. I would rather have Spencer Dinwiddie than Dennis Schroeder, straight up head to head, but it wouldn't be a 1-for-1 swap. It would be like 1-for-6 swap or 1-for-5 swap. And the Nets aren't getting all five of those things. But the Lakers are losing all five of those things. So it's got to be a big upgrade. And I think he gets the rim similar to Schroeder. He finishes at the rim better than Schroeder. The shooting isn't a big upgrade.
Well, he's also coming off of what, torn ACL?
And he's coming off an injury.
So I'm not saying he isn't going to get back to the level he's at. He's 28 coming off a torn ACL. You have to put that into consideration as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just, all things considered, I would rather go other routes. I would rather go other routes that we talked about on this podcast a couple weeks ago. I'd rather go do my Joe Ingles deal or my Buddy Hield deal, or I'd rather go deal with that Malik Beasley deal. Like that volume of assets, the math doesn't make sense in this one for me.
The more we talk about it, the more I'm going to hate this summer for the Lakers. Like, it's so hard. I mean, I'm praying to believe in Rob for him to prove me wrong. But seeing what's on the board and what's practical and what's available, it's tough for me to get excited about Joe Ingles and losing our pick. I hear you. We had the conversation. I know he's a good player and better than Kuzma, right? Of course. It's just tough, you know, when you use those bullets on a aging guy.
Yes.
So I don't know if you want to move on. Let's move on to another guy who's been loosely connected. I don't know, you know, how to explain that. But DeMar DeRozan, for years, you know, talked about possibly coming to the Lakers when he was a free agent, when he was still with the Raptors. Obviously, we know the LA connection, the Kobe connection. I don't know if, I mean, he's certainly not the player he used to be. Let's get that straight. Mm-hmm. But the player he used to be, even if he, you know, got back to that level, I don't know if that's a useful thing for a team who lacks outside shooting. He's a good playmaker. He can get to his spots in the mid-range, but that I feel like we add DeMar DeRozan, we immediately become like the most mid-range heavy team in the league, and like surpassing Phoenix.
Yep, and I don't like comparing him to what the Suns are doing. In that, you know, I've seen on Twitter, oh well, you know, he's a mid-range guy. We're seeing mid-range players succeed in the NBA Finals. Mm. They're mid-range players. And then everything else, they're scoring at the rim, they're hitting their threes. Yes, they're also good at that, but that doesn't mean it's a fair comparison. So
yeah, no, I'm definitely not comparing the teams. I'm just saying, like, if you add another guy, Tim, we've talked so much about our mid-range, you know, proficiency. We're just going to add to more mid-range shots and less three-point attempts.
Yeah, this is the worst fit. This is unless you're playing Anthony Davis at the center for a substantial period of time, bringing in a guy who just played power forward and you kind of have to play as a big man from like a spacing shooting standpoint, having your best two players be your small forward and power forward slotting into a lineup in LeBron and AD, it's tough to really throw DeRozan out there. Defensively, he's been someone that year after year has been a really big negative. This year, he was one of those guys that was in the helper and wasn't doing any helping. And so he was really in that hider role. He is just trying to not – he was doing what LeBron does, but being way less active than LeBron at it. So it's his defense will be more negatively impactful next year, having to do more than he was kind of able to do this year. He was able to hide in the shadows a bit and not be picked on. It's just a really, really bad fit from a defensive role standpoint, from an offensive fit standpoint. If the Lakers team was built around a star point guard and a star center, adding DeRozan would make more sense than having a star 3 and 4. So it's – and again, Mark Spears, I mentioned this earlier, we asked him and he said no. DeRozan has not been – there hasn't –
that's not happening.
Haven't heard anything. There's nothing going on there. And this isn't just like, oh, yeah, no, I don't think so. Like, he's checking.
No, it smells like just a Twitter story to me.
Yeah. Oh, and this happens, you know, like every offseason.
Absolutely.
Now we feel more empowered because we're able to go, like, dig into some of this stuff and know that it's bullshit. But you're just going to, again, you're going to find people coming up with fake rumors for clout.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, here's one thing to get DeMar DeRozan for the mid-level exception, and you're stoked with that, right? Absolutely. That is a great player for that price, but that's not going to happen. He's going to get a $15 to $20 million a year contract still, and that's kind of prohibitive to me, obviously, for the Lakers, but also for the ceiling of a team paying DeMar DeRozan $15 to $20 million a year.
Yeah. I think he'll be on the lower end of that from what I've looked at so far. I'll have a more concrete answer next week, but from the teams I've looked at, I don't see him as a great fit for a lot of them. And I think the Spurs are ready to move on. They're in a situation where if they renounce him, Rudy Gay, and another player or two they're all aging, they can build around their young core and then have like $20 or $30 million in cap space. So they have a chance to go make some real swings at like restricted free agents or go after some top guys, go after a Spencer Dinwiddie or something like that. Now was their chance because a lot of teams won't have that spending power. So I definitely think he's moving on from San Antonio. How much he gets is going to be above what the Lakers can offer, but I'm not sure if he'll quite – I don't think he's going to get 20 this time around.
So, Tim, I want to throw a curveball at you here and put a name that we haven't talked about, and there's a couple reasons. Sometimes the moves that are kind of just outside the practical, but – if you read the tea leaves later, you like think, oh, why didn't we think this, right? I've seen numerous times throughout the years that Zach LaVine wants to come to the Lakers. The way he speaks about the Lakers, they're the kind of player who forces his way to the Lakers, to me, is a Zach LaVine. Now, and this is just totally putting aside whether I'd want him, what we'd have to give up, all that. Now, we can do that really quick, but this is what makes sense to me. Now, he still has another year left on his deal, I think. But they just made that trade for Vucevic, so they're probably not thinking this, but if he goes to them and says, I want out, and this is probably more likely a trade deadline thing than an offseason thing, but he says, I want out and I want to go to the Lakers, it could behoove the Bulls to take a package of a sign-and-trade Dennis Schroeder, a THT, and the 22 plus whatever else it takes, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that's actually, to me, and again, this requires for it to be practical, Zach LaVine to say, I want to go to the Lakers and only the Lakers. But there's some smoke there to me. Just some little bits of smoke coming up when, you know, you're trying to get that kindling going. You don't know if it's going to catch.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think it's possible with the money as far as the Bulls cap sheet. And I think it's actually practical based on the kind of personality that Zach LaVine is. So, I don't know. What do you think? Is it possible? Is it practical? Do you want it?
It's possible. Chicago was a team we covered yesterday in the Discord. And what my takeaway after that discussion was is I bet he's talking to their leadership now or around now. And they're going to sit him down and say, you know, we want to sign a contract extension with you in order to get you to buy into that. Here's our plan for this offseason. And my guess is they waive and stretch Aminu, which frees up space. I bet they waive Satoransky. I bet they waive Archie Diacono, Felicio, Tice, Valentine, Green, Markkanen. They bring they bring Thad Young back. They then have $22.2 million in cap space to go find a point guard and a small forward and build a competitive team around Zach LaVine. They have some pieces that I like. They have a lot of pieces I think I would be in there ready to move on from, but they are one of those few teams that will have money this offseason, and if they make the right moves and the chips go in their favor, they'll be in a position where they can truly give it a shot. And I don't think they're going to win a title, but I think they can make their roster make way more sense and really upgrade from a talent perspective, because they got 22 mil. Then they also have that room exception, which is basically $5 million, similar to the taxpayer MLE. And if they can use those two things on two or three players, they can build a pretty strong rotation. And I agree with you that if it were to happen, if he were to come to the Lakers, it would have to be more a trade deadline sort of thing where they make these moves, they start the season off, and either it goes well and he signs an extension, or it's not going well, and then we start hearing way more smoke, and then something happens later in the season. Again, there's no guarantee he'd do this, but he seems like that kind of guy. Yeah, and I don't know if that's a positive that's where I'm or coming negative from. Thing, but if
he's literally told us with his own words, is why.
Yeah, it's. Yeah,
he's always wanted to play for the Lakers. So not every player says that.
Yeah, this is one of the many reasons people don't like the Lakers, because that's just not fair. That's just like, come on, like seriously.
Okay, again, we have created a 50-plus year history of empowering successful, you know, players to be their best selves. I would want to come here too.
It's a resume.
Okay, that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. There is a real reason. It's not just, you know, it's warm.
And right.
LA. No, we've.
I mean, so is Miami. So is the Clippers. You know what I mean? Like, you want to go, you want warm, go to fucking Phoenix. Yeah. Anyway, I bring up Zach LaVine just as a curveball to throw at you because of the smoke, because of all that. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm definitely not banking on it, but it's the reasonable, you know, 5% transaction that I'm not completely ruling out yet. And I think that would be a killer big three.
Huge.
And I could set his defense aside. He has grown so much and impressed me so much. I thought he was a chucker, you know, kind of one of those head down black hole kind of guys. And he kind of was early in his career in Minnesota, but he's gotten so much better at being a chucker and being an efficient chucker. That he's really impressed me as a player. But also, I was just going to say, it's also relevant because the Bulls, you know, there's like this very clear line between competing teams and I don't want to say tanking teams, but rebuilding teams, right? And after the Vucevic trade, they thought they were going to jump that fence in the competing teams. And they're sitting right on the fence right now. Mm-hmm. They could fall to the left. They could fall to the right.
Yeah. They can.
So it's a very Jenga, you know, house of cards over there is why I think it's also practical. Yep.
And whether or not he signs the extension is going to be really big, because if he doesn't and then wants out, his value for another team who might trade for him might be lower than for the Lakers. If he says, I want to go play for the Lakers, and he only has one year left on his contract, he becomes a rental for other teams. Compared to if he does sign his deal and he says he wants to play with the Lakers, a contender may go after him, get him, and get him to be happy winning somewhere else other than LA. And that is a whole completely different situation if they have him for another 5 years or something like that. So his contract is what really makes this way more feasible than saying like, oh, well, Luka Doncic might say this in 2 months. Like, that's you're just making like, great, you can hope for that, but we have no reason to believe that's going to happen. Levine has exhibited the behaviors and has the right contract and is in the right team situation that it the stars may be lining up. So that's a really good call out.
Exactly. Thank you. Last one we get to really here. We're talking just strictly sign and trades. We will come back, obviously, and do more, you know, open free agent discussion. We'll have some draft people on to talk a little bit about the draft with us. But for now, Kyle Lowry, I think, is another big piece that we had targeted at the last trade deadline. There was a kind of package in place, but the Lakers weren't willing to include Talen Horton-Tucker. And we talked, I think, a few weeks ago about that trade and whether we would do it now. And I think we both agreed that we would. And that trade involved Schroeder as well, mostly, I think, for salary matching. So if we were, what would a sign and trade package look like for Kyle Lowry? And would that leave the Lakers with enough, you know, supporting players left over to fill out a roster and stay under the hard cap?
It would. So, you, for some extra context, I believe we would be competing with Miami in terms of trade package. There were other teams that were interested in Lowry earlier on, and that things have kind of cooled off a bit. Miami is a team that Jimmy Butler really wants Kyle Lowry from the intel I'm hearing. He's been pounding the table for him. They want to appease Jimmy, and they believe they have the assets to do it. If from a Miami standpoint, what it would look like would be picking up the options for Andre Iguodala, Goran Dragic, and then trading the two of them with Hero, with maybe Hero, maybe they have a bunch of first round picks to offer potentially. And then I'm going to say his name wrong, Precious Achiuwa?
Precious Achiuwa. Okay.
The, Toronto is really interested in him. So that would be the package you would have to compete against. That's like a legit average to higher end backup point guard in Dragic, depending on, you know, how he's looking physically. Iguodala, who's like a pretty good piece to help a winning team off the bench. Young player that they like, a young big man who Toronto is really, really interested in. And then probably either Hero, another young, good shooter, or multiple first round picks. I don't know if the Lakers will be able to compete with that. It would definitely have to include THT. I don't think like KCP is getting it done. I don't think KCP Kuzma's getting
maybe
it done.
Maybe Kuzma. I mean, Kuzma more than KCP, but yeah, agree. They have OG there. They don't really
They
need wings.
They need a point guard. They like really, really need a point guard. And they need a point guard that can penetrate, and Schroeder can penetrate. But also throwing Dennis Schroeder into a lineup that has Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, from a shooting standpoint, it makes it a tough fit. In the same way that like, so like Derrick Rose can make sense for them this offseason. But like there are other players that penetrate well, don't shoot all that well. And it's like, ah, that makes less sense. So that's, I think, what you'd be looking at doing. If you were to, from the Lakers perspective, bring Lowry over, he would have to sign a 3 year or 4 year deal. So that would probably look like a 360. So you're bringing in $20 million. If your trade package looks like the 22 pick, THT, KCP, I don't know exactly how it looks. You've got to make sure the money works there. If you're trading away THT, that actually helps the Lakers compared to like a Dinwiddie situation where Caruso probably gets squeezed. If they're trading THT, they probably still have money for Caruso. So I'd have to really write it down on paper. But I think from a monetary standpoint, if the Lakers could get a Lowry deal done, they would – I mean, they'd still lose their MLE, but they would be able to bring back Caruso. But I think that the cost to do that deal would definitely cost THT and isn't something the team has been ready to do.
To our Yeah, to our conversation the other week, this would be a strictly win this year move because Kyle Lowry, as of today, is 35 years old. And so you're not only you're paying him all that money kind of just to get him in the door for this year in a practical. And if you're lucky, you get 2 years. But that third year, unless, you know, it has to be guaranteed, I believe, in the sign and trade. There's no, you know, non-guarantees that you can kind of tack on to kind of save yourself. So if you get that around your neck, dude, this is the last year Deng is going to be on the books. You can't get another bad contract that you're going to have to stretch and plague your books, even if it's only like $6 million a year for 5 years. That adds up and really limits, especially when you're a team who was hard capped last year, right? Imagine what that $5 million could have gone toward if Luol Deng wasn't still on the books because of poor decisions years ago. So I'm not saying Lowry is Deng. Of course, he's a useful player. I'm just saying the risk of the later years is basically to give you a chance at one chip. And you do that. I agree. You do that when you can. But I don't know if that is a definite championship team with Kyle Lowry. It's not clear enough to me to make that risk worth it.
If the Lakers were to do the deal, I just ran the numbers quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do we think it would cost to beat that Miami offer?
Honestly, like everything 22, we could. Yeah.
THT. And one of KCP or Kuzma? Both of them? We'll just say one of them. For now, we'll say one of them.
So, side question. Well, Schroeder, right? Are we talking Schroeder mm-hmm. as well? We'd have to. That's what I thought. We were kind of the guys, right?
Yeah, I got to hang on. I got to pull up. So, if the Lakers were to sign and trade Schroeder, Kuzma, the 22 pick, and THT to Toronto in exchange for Kyle Lowry. On the Lakers side of things, they would have, from a money standpoint, they would be able to re-sign Alex Caruso to like $15 million if they needed to. And they would have space under the apron for which they could use the rest of their full MLE, so it might be $3-4 million that they'd have available to them. From the Toronto standpoint, it gets a bit trickier because bringing in THT, there's $10.5 million. Bringing in the number two pick, that's $2.5 million. Bringing in Kuzma was $13 million. If it's KCP, it's about the same amount of money. And they're gonna have to re-sign Gary Trent Jr. probably for $15-17 million. If they do all of that, they would then have under $15 million to pay Dennis Schroeder. And then that would be that basically all they're able to do. And then they wouldn't be able to use their MLE either, even if they're kind of letting people go.
Well, and just to be clear, we brought it up earlier. This would require Dennis Schroeder signing on to play in Toronto, which, I mean, they're not exactly rebuilding, but I mean, they have a top four pick this year. They could turn it around real quick. They have great players in Van Vliet and you know, OG and Siakam. And I just don't know, you know, I don't know if he's excited to go to Toronto in Canada. So it's just context there. But thank you for laying that out. I think I'm more open to that one than I thought I was when we started this conversation. I thought it might be too much going out, but that one might be worth it to still have some of the MLE too and still have other bullets in the chamber after that trade. That's kind of promising.
Yeah, it could work. I mean, it's just, it costs you THT as well. So THT, the pick, Kuzma, Schroeder for Kyle Lowry. And you still have, you know, you can keep Caruso and then you have some money to spend on another spot. And then you're going to end up with four minimum salary guys or two minimum guys. And then if you bring Kiefen Wesson back,
I mean, they're going to
actually, no, there's an additional one anyway. No, actually. So there are one, two, three, there'd be five minimum players And then if Keith or Wes takes some of those spots, you lower that number. But the Lakers would have to have a lot of ring-chasing help, I think, to round out the roster.
So different than it was this year, to be honest.
This time around? Two or three?
I mean, Keith, Quinn Cook.
But Quinn Cook didn't play. I'm looking at, like, yeah, but if the Lakers are doing this and want to stay where they need to be from a CBA standpoint, they're going to end up with 12 players and that's it. And then two-way guys to fill out the rest of the roster. They're not going to have to fill out a full roster like they did this year.
No, I get you.
And like five of those 12 are going to be min guys.
Yeah.
So
you need them to be, yeah, like better.
That's a big piece of your rotation. Yeah.
You know,
especially to bring in like an old guy with an older guy with Kyle Lowry. So that's a lot of, like, you've got LeBron, AD, KCP, Lowry, Caruso, Gasol, $4-5 million on another guy, and then a bunch of minimums as your entire rotation. So like the bench unit might be like, you know, KCP and a bunch of mid players, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
it's tough, man.
It's less appealing. Like you said before, it's a very much like a win now, win immediately move.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an option.
It is. And to your point, you've made this before. If you can win a championship, you do just about anything. And that's something that can get you into trouble down the road, but you hang that banner forever. And we've got 17 of them. So we've been willing to make risk. And I think it's all about risk assessment ultimately. And making the smart risk play, not just a risk play for risk's sake.
And another key piece of this too is what does that taxpayer MLE, what is like $4-6 million, what does that get you this year in the market? Right now, don't really know. It's kind of like evaluating the value of like a future pick.
Yeah.
But once it turns into something, it's like, oh crap, this wasn't actually a war chest of picks, Boston.
Sure.
Or maybe it was something great.
Montrez for the mid-level, right? Like that was not a guy on our radar as far as targeting.
Yeah, so maybe we are able to get somebody based on, you know, the player we get might add more value than what we're paying them, but because of the market situation, we're able to, you know, because of the game of musical chairs, they've got to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where LA is in the pecking order compared to what available players are will be another key piece of this, and that's an answer we will have, not today, but next week. So that would shape, if it's like really crappy, I'm much more willing to do some of these offers. Where we don't have that available. If like we can get a really good player, I would be more willing to be conservative and, you know, keep what we've got, maybe make a trade around the margins, my Ingles trade, something like that, and then go add a good player with that tax MLE, and you've upgraded the roster potentially.
All right, man. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. I think that's a good place to leave it. I think it was smart to kind of lay out what sign and trades look like for people who are just throwing out the sign and trade, you know, option for every player, for Dinwiddie, for all these guys, and realize the practical application of this rule is a lot more, you know, strict than you'd think, especially with just the players wanting to go there.
Yeah. And with this last example, we need Toronto to want to pay Dennis Schroeder his 15 or 17 or 20 mil or whatever it is. Whereas, you know, they might be looking at the offseason and that could be an option on their cheat sheet, but they might say, oh, let's go get Derrick Rose. Let's go get Reggie Jackson. They like, might have
just lose Lowry for nothing than pay a guy we don't want to pay 17 mil.
Yeah. And like they very well could say, like, Lowry's been our dude for years and years and years. And this is their Kobe. Like in terms of meaning to their franchise, they could say, let's ride it out and we can go grab another guard, but we don't need to lose Lowry in the process. If through free agency, we have the money available to go get somebody that's good. We don't, you know, what Schroeder brings isn't worth the price potentially.
Right.
So you never know. There are a lot of perspectives to consider. I see a lot of fun trades being thrown out there that like fix all of our problems, but nobody's going to agree to on the other side.
Exactly.
So, you know, when you do stuff like this, you know, get it out there, throw it in front of other people and talk to your friends from the other teams. If you have any, or throw it out on Twitter, see if it's realistic or not. Feel free to throw it our way.
Yeah.
I'm going to regret saying that because I'm going to have 20.
Get at us in the Discord. Get at us in the Discord.
Trade NBA DMs. Yeah, I'll answer Discord. I answer all of the Discord questions.
That's right.
I answer a much lower percentage of random questions I get on Twitter. Try to get to what I can.
Well, yeah, good stuff, man. Let's try and get more into free agent options next week. Maybe start with the guards. I think, you know, we have some guard, you know, decisions to make on our own roster, but let's just be aware of what's on the market so that can inform our in-house roster decisions. So we'll put that on the docket. And until then, we'll talk to you guys next time.